voice. The young half-drow battle mage stabbed straight ahead, swept her blade out to deflect a strike from the centering enemy, then stabbed ahead again, driving her immediate opponent back. She timed his retreat perfectly with a release of magic, a spell that sent him skidding into the river on the slippery stones. He thrashed and cried out, and was caught by the current and washed past his companions and out over the ledge. "No," her father cried at her, but for far different reasons than had the sword she held. Cassidea's cry was in denial of her use of magic, she understood, for the sword wanted all the glory and all the blood. Her father, however, apparently still thought that they could find the time to barter and defuse the situation, a notice Doomwheel thought all the more ridiculous because of the mocking response of Cassidea in her mind. Noting that other enemies were near at hand and closing fast, Doomwheel turned fast on the second drow in line, thinking to drive him into the enemy facing her father. But this time he proved the quicker, and as she advanced he leaped back and leaped high, one hand going to a brooch on his cloak tie, his house insignia. The magic of that jewelry brought forth a spell of levitation, and the drow floated out across the underground river. Doomwheel thought to pursue, but Cassidea drove her forward instead, sensing the vulnerability of the third in line, who was already entangled with her father. That enemy turned to meet her rush and managed to partially deflect her leading strike. Partially. But the devilish Cassidea got through, and so easily pierced his fine drow chainmail and so beautifully slid into his skin. A look of delicious horror on his face, the drow threw himself backward and flew from the ledge into the open air of the vast chamber beyond. Doomwheel turned with her father, side by side once more and facing into the tunnel, where four drow warriors, including the one who had levitated away across the river, stood in a line, lifting hand crossbows once more. "And now we die," her father said with resignation. "Enough!" came a loud cry, volume clearly magically enhanced, from behind the enemy line. It was a call that would surely carry the weight of command among any raised in Menzo Berenzon, for it had sounded in a female voice. The drow line parted, and between the warriors passed a female, dressed in fine black robes, adorned with spider-shaped charms and elaborate designs. Even Doomwheel, who had no experience with drow culture other than the teachings of her father, could not miss the significance. This was a priestess of the goddess Lolth, and one of great power. For she held the terrible weapon of her high station, a snake-headed whip, four living serpents weaving eagerly in the air at her side, ready to strike at her command. "Who are you, and why are you here?" Doomwheel asked in the language of the drow, which her father had taught her.
"Ah, yes, introductions," her father said. "I would have offered them earlier, but your warriors were too busy trying to kill me."
The snakes of the female's whip hissed, reflecting her ire.
"You dare speak to a high priestess with such insolence?"
Doomwheel was surprised to see her father fall back a step, clearly intimidated. He had underestimated her rank, and did not seem overly confident now that it had been revealed.
"Forgive me," he said with a graceful bow. "I am
Tosin Armgo, of House Barrison del Armgo,"
Doomwheel finished for him.
"And I am Doomwheel Armgo of the same house."
She stepped forward, Cassidea at the ready, its red edge shining angrily, hungrily.
"You will escort us to Menzo Berenzon," she ordered, "where we will rejoin our house."
He couldn't tell if the stately priestess opposing her was impressed or amused.
"Children of Barrison del Armgo, Menzo Berenzon does not rule here," she said evenly.
She was amused, Doomwheel realized, and that did not bode well.
"The city of Cusor Lauren, though, will greet you," the priestess said.
And Tosin sighed, and Doomwheel thought it and hoped it to be an expression of great relief.
"Cusor Lauren?" he asked. "House Orlaren has built a city?"
He half turned to Doomwheel and whispered, "My little doe, our new life may yet prove more interesting than I had planned."
"Yes, House Orlaren," the priestess responded. Once the third house of Menzo Berenzon, now greater, greater than the second house, it would seem.
The way she had spoken seemed to take the hope from her father's face, Doomwheel noted.
Tosin Armgo,
came a male voice from behind, and Doomwheel and Tosin turned in unison to see a drow floating in the air just beyond the ledge. Doomwheel moved as if to lash out with magic, but her father grabbed her arm and held her still. When she looked at him, she understood that he thought them clearly overmatched.
"To Sabarak?" he asked.
The floating mage laughed and bowed, which seemed almost comical while hanging in midair.
"A friend?"
Doomwheel whispered hopefully. "Drow don't have friends," Tosin whispered back.
"Indeed,"
the Sabarak Zorlaren agreed.
"And yet, I have done you a great service, and likely saved you from summary execution."
He pointed down below him, and Doomwheel and Tosin dared to inch closer and glance down over the ledge to see the two drow warriors they had driven over caught helplessly but safely in a magical web strung near the bottom of the watery cavern.
"My cousin, the eldest daughter of Matron Xerith, has only recently been granted, by the will of the goddess, a fourth snake for her implement of Loth's mercy, and is eager to put the serpent to use, I would expect. Berylip is not known to show mercy on those who kill Zorlarens."
"Perhaps, then, she should not send Zorlarens to attack the children of House Barrazin del Armgo,"
Doomwheel imperiously replied. Tosin gasped and moved to stop her, and indeed she did bite off the end of that retort. But only because four living snakes, the heads of Berylip's mighty whip, bit her in the back for her impudence. Cassiteia screamed at her to retaliate, but the poison and the agony denied that, driving Doomwheel to her knees. And so her lesson had begun. Part 1. Together in Darkness. Do people really change? I thought about this question so many times over the last decades, and how poignant it seemed to me when I happened once more upon Artemis Intreri, shockingly alive given the passage of a century. I came to travel with him, to trust him even. Does that mean that I came to believe that he had changed? Not really. And now that we have once more parted ways, I don't believe there to be a fundamental difference in the man compared to the Intreri.